Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Jeff Sullivan.
We want to go into the weeds. Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs.
Senior editor at Fangraphs.
You get on base, we win. You don't, we lose. And I hate losing.
Going inside the numbers.
There are still dinosaurs out there, but there's exit velocity on national baseball games now. People are talking about UZR on broadcast. It's over.
You still don't need cyber metrics. If it has anything to do with figuring stuff out.
Jeff Sullivan with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Jeff Sullivan of Fangraphs is brought to you by Poogie. Buying a new car from Poogie can be a beautiful thing. Visit Poogie.com today. He's on Twitter at @based_ball. He is a senior editor at Fangraphs, Jeff Sullivan. Hello again, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Good morning. How are you?
We're good. It's a little strange day for us with the split doubleheader upon us because of the rainout last night. But Chicago is wondering, and I'm curious what you are noticing in the Chris Bryant power outage. What's happening here, and is this variance or is this an issue?
Well, let's start from this position because we talked recently about Chris Bryant being a little like Paul Goldschmidt, a guy you look at, and even when he's slumping, you don't worry too much. But I did pull up just for this little segment. I pulled up a rolling average plot. If that means anything to anybody, over. I just looking at Chris Bryant's entire career, and what's a simple stat here? OPS, that's pretty simple, right? So over the past 30 games, Chris Bryant's OPS is just 708. That's not very good. That's not anywhere near Bryant levels. But there was a 30 game stretch leading into last April, sort of overlapping with the end of 2016, where his OPS was 617. Back when he was a rookie, he had some stretches where he was down around 640, 650. So this. You sort of have to start from the perspective that this is not unprecedented, and it's important to understand when you look at even the best baseball players, excluding Mike Trout, they do go up and down. Their seasons are always volatile. There are these spikes. Now, with Bryant, look at this past month. I know he just hit a home run the other day, so that ended his, month-long drought, which is a good sign. Cubs believe he's coming out of it, and I believe he's going to come out of it. But he is getting under the ball a lot more than he usually does. This month in particular, he's really not been able to pull the ball with much of any authority. I know we're going to talk about Jason Hayward in this segment, too. He's actually been hitting the ball harder than Bryant, which is not what anyone expected to be talking about. But Bryant is an interesting one, because when he came up, you remember he was so good at hitting the ball for power to the opposite field, and over time he didn't get worse, but he changed. He became a pretty extreme pull power hitter, and he really can't do a whole lot to the opposite field, and this past month in particular he's been going the other way a little too much for someone of a skill set. I don't see any evidence he's being pitched meaningfully differently. I think this is probably just one of those things that has snowballed on him. I haven't heard any whispers of an injury. Maybe you have, I don't know, but it does just seem like his timing is a little bit off, and I think that's just what a run-of-the-mill slump looks like.
He has mentioned that the timing's been a little bit off, that maybe he's just a little bit out in front and seems pretty confident about things. But I did want to ask, just to make sure that when you look at data like this, when you look at trends like this, injury is something that pops up for you, right? Or something that you wonder about. Chris hasn't mentioned anything. The Cubs haven't mentioned anything about it, and I'm not saying he is or not. I just want to know whether sometimes that correlates given the information you're seeing.
Yeah, and sometimes it's maybe some sort of day-to-day injury that just knocks your timing off in the first place. You know, if your mechanics get knocked askance just for a few days, it can take a while to recover from that. And if you look at I just broke the season so far in half, so basically taking, I don't know, fifths of the season, looking at both Bryant and Hayward. And Chris Bryant, since the first half of his season this year, if that makes any sense, he is hitting the ball less hard, and he is getting under the ball a lot more. His launch angle is up almost 10 degrees. His exit velocity is down around some fairly pedestrian level. So, I mean, all the numbers support the idea that Chris Bryant is in a slump. This isn't just one of those luck things. He's definitely been hitting the ball worse. He's been striking out a little more lately, and that's always a concern because that's something that seemed like he solved back when he was a sophomore. But I mean, I assume he's not hurt. His defense, his base running, everything else has been so good. Everything looks pretty normal. So I would assume that this is the kind of thing that he'll shake off with one of those series where he has like 7 hits and 5 for extra bases.
You mentioned Mike Trout's name in there. Just say anybody who is not Mike Trout. And it's like every time I look at Twitter, I see another remarkable statistic about something you just can't get your head around. And it's, are we becoming numb to greatness here? It's one thing to know that we can't really watch him play, but I don't feel as a baseball fan sometimes that I'm doing enough to appreciate an all-time great player at the absolute peak of his powers.
I mean, you're not. None of us are. I don't know how we can. I know there are two minds here, and one is that we should talk about Mike Trout as much as possible because he is the greatest player that is in the world. He's one of the greatest players in the history of the game. And the other mind is, you know, there are 749 other baseball players on any given day, and why are you giving them such short shrift? All of them can do something extraordinary, but you do, to get a little psychological, it's just a natural tendency that you start to take things for granted, that you can't not do it. It's why Chris Bryant, now his slump gets magnified, because you just take how good he is. He's a perennial MVP candidate. You start to take him for granted. It's hard to appreciate things the same way when you get used to them being so great. Think about sunny days. Have 10 sunny days in a row. You just start to get used to it if you like the sun. I guess everyone's different. But with Mike Trout, I guess you could say that from the media perspective, if you can't convince people to appreciate him more, but if it's the angle that you want to take, if you want to just give him more attention, you just have to write about him more and more. It becomes a fun little game that we all play to just try to find a new way to explain how Mike Trout is doing something amazing, because all the old ways we're already used to.
Well, let's keep playing the fun game then, or at least the most unfun part of Mike Trout's game so far. He's only been in the playoffs once. Yeah, he's had teammates and injuries around those teammates that have affected the team. How, in your opinion, has the lack of success the Angels have had while Mike Trout's been there affected our ability to appreciate him?
Oh, it's bad. I mean, we know it's a problem. I mean, think of it. Yesterday, Kelvin Herrera got traded, right?
Yeah.
And everyone who saw the news is like, oh yeah, Kelvin Herrera. I remember watching him be so good in the playoffs. Plays for the Royals. Like, there's no way anyone would know. Like, if I told you something about Kirby Yates, you know, Kirby Yates has not really been worse than Kelvin Herrera, but nobody knows who I'm talking about. He hasn't been in the playoffs. But so it does wonders for someone's exposure level, and obviously that's something that's been a problem for Trout. You could say that maybe his Subway commercial wasn't charismatic enough, or you could say mostly that he's playing for the Angels, playing out west. And I mean, I went to college on the East Coast. I wrote about the Mariners every day, and I know that I was watching their games until 1 a.m. You just can't. You can't expect people to keep up with what's going on the West Coast very often, especially when the team isn't very good. So this is one of those things that I don't know how much Mike Trout himself cares. He knows how great he is. Everyone knows how great he is, but he will hit free agency at some point, and it's going to be interesting to see if he wants to go back to the East Coast, because he could have a much more popular second half of his career than the first, even if the second half of his career, which it will be worse than the first half.
It's hard for a teammate to steal the thunder from somebody as good as Bryce Harper, but with Bryce Harper slumping at the moment and Juan Soto arriving, we were just watching some highlights of him before the show. This is a thing, isn't it? This merits nightly attention, because he might be another one of these near perfectly constructed baseball players. Is that possible?
He is extremely good. Unfortunately, it's not true anymore, but when he first came up, he had more walks than strikeouts. Now he's come away from that a little bit. He's whiffed a little more often, but if you look at him, he doesn't, I mean, what he hit a home run. I know it was a home run hit May 15th, right? But he hit a home run yesterday in that suspended game. And if you look at that clip, his swing is so short, yep, and it's so clean, and he hit the ball like 460 feet. I don't even know what it was. There was an interview with the Nationals hitting coach, Kevin Long, right? It's Kevin Long, and it was a Ken Rosenthal interview that he published last week at The Athletic. And I know that Kevin Long is coming at this from the angle of, well, these are my players, so I'm gonna puff them up a little bit. But he was talking about Soto in terms of having a nearly flawless swing. He's 19 years old. He's going to be 19 all season long, and he doesn't have holes. Even Bryce Harper now, he's doing that thing where he pulls off a little too much, right? Bryce Harper gets a little too violent, and then he just makes worse contact than usual for a while. Juan Soto's swing is so quick. You look at when Mike Trout hits one of his home runs now, there's no arm extension. He just flicks his forearms and the ball goes 150 miles per hour somewhere else. It's so clean. And Soto's swing is so clean, and he's so disciplined. His chase rate right now is about 23%. That means he swings at about 23% of pitches out of the strike zone. And the average is about 30 or 31. And just to see him be this disciplined, this powerful, this young, it's extraordinary.
So from a couple of lefties with pop and discipline to one locally that's kind of reworked some things, Jason Hayward has gotten himself on track in a way that I don't think a lot of people expected. Watching him, Jeff, I think about The Art of Hitting and Tony Gwynn writing about, you know, swinging the knob and want to make sure that you're pulling that bat through the zone. Jason's talked a lot about the whip that he's got in his swing. But for me, it's and Joe's talked about this a little bit too, Joe Maddon, the top half and bottom half of his swing are actually in sync right now. It's not like this unfolding lawn chair softball swing that I take out on Thursday nights. Like, this is I wonder what biggest piece makes the difference for you.
It's hard with someone like Jason Hayward. There's a little bit of a, it's not quite a boy who cried wolf thing, but his swing has been changing and tweaking for so long, his entire career, that it's always hard to pinpoint exactly what's making the difference, because he's just tried so many different things. He's always moving his hands around. But you look at him lately, and one of the things that I like to look at is the pitchers will tell you when they're seeing something different. And lately, pitchers have been throwing Jason Hayward far fewer fastballs. His fastball rate that he's seen has cratered, because he's been so good against fastballs this past stretch since he came back from the concussion. And so I don't know if that means he's cheating or hunting fastballs, but you think when Hayward first became a Cub, he was so easy to beat. You just pound him inside and he couldn't get around on anything. And he's been able, I mean, what, he just hit Jordan Hicks the other day, right? Yep. That takes it's a pretty extraordinary thing to do. So pitchers have noticed that Hayward is getting around quickly. It's funny, through the middle of May, Hayward and Chris Bryant had the exact same average launch angle. That is, they were hitting balls in the air to the same degree that they were hitting balls on the ground. And since then, Bryant has shot up and Hayward has shot down. Hayward does not hit necessarily for a whole lot of power, but he's just become that sort of clean line drive machine. Now, because of how volatile he's been, you can't say that we know this is going to keep up. We know this is going to be stable, but Hayward has never had problems, even as a Cub, making contact. He's never had problems drawing walks. He's just had problems making good contact, and he's been making the best contact for about a month now. He's been making the best contact he's made as a Cub. And if you're going to worry a little bit, Chris Bryant, which I wouldn't recommend, then you have to subtract some worry for Jason Hayward, and he's not going to opt out of his contract after the year. He's not that good, but it definitely looks like he's back on the radar as a quality hitter.
The Houston Astros came back. It looks like it was going to be the end of their 11-game win streak. Well, it turns out it's a 12-game winning streak. We talked to Theo Epstein last week about a team's mentality and wins begetting wins. And even though I know the analytical side of Theo's mind understands that mathematically there's no reason to believe in the concept of game-to-game momentum, his right brain, the psychologist in him, does think that a team's approach can make you more likely to perform well when you are feeling good about yourself. How do you reconcile those things if indeed you believe both things are true?
I don't think that there's any question that if you have a team on a hot streak, then the players are going to be a little more excited to come to the ballpark, and they're going to be a little more focused, just as I believe in the opposite of that. If you're in a deep slump, look at the Orioles. You know, it's hard to see the Orioles pulling off 7 wins in a row. It's hard to see the Orioles pulling off 1 win in a row, to be honest.
But again, it could be just because they're bad and not because they're losing, if that makes any sense. And the win streak occurs because the Astros each night are really, really good. It's not because they won the previous night.
Right. I think that it will affect the mood that you have when you approach the field. And then I think that when the baseball game begins, I think that it is almost all out the window. I don't think that there's much of a carryover effect. I think it really does come down to how well is the guy on the mound throwing to us right now. And I mean, it's not a complete coincidence that the Astros win streak has overlapped with, what is this, like 11 straight games they played against the Rangers and the A's and the Royals and the Rays. These are not very good teams. Not all terrible teams, but they're not very good. Also, important to point out, the Astros have the best team in baseball. Mm-hmm. They're the defending champions. They have the best pitching staff. They probably have the best offense. They have an improved defense. They have a good bullpen. They have by far the best run differential. Every single indicator you look at this season says the Astros are far and away better than any other team in baseball. And when you have the best team in baseball, that team is the team that's most likely to go on an extended win streak. So, you know, we nearly saw the win streak end yesterday. The Rays had the Astros down to, I think, their final out, maybe one of their final two outs. I don't know when Bregman came up, but you know, he got around on a slider that was pretty well located away, and he drove in two runs to walk it off. Not a bad pitch, just a good swing from a good hitter. But mostly the takeaway here is I think the Astros do feel great. I know Bregman just said that in his opinion, the people haven't seen anything yet. Now, I think that's silly. They won the World Series. Not a whole lot more you can do than that, right. But this is an extremely good baseball team. They nearly lost. They will lose, and when they lose, the win streak will be forgotten. I mean, we saw what happened with the Indians last year. Mm. Long win streak, and they didn't make it through to the World Series, but the Astros are the best team in baseball, and there's really nothing else to be said here.
One more before we let you go. From the best team to some of the teams on the margins, you think of teams with one-run game records that are just out of this world, and in the past, you go back to like a Jim Johnson Orioles team. This Mariners team, yep, has actually got a pretty decent, a pretty great one-run game record. The Cubs are about five games under in those types of games. Do we know anything really that's correlative between teams winning a bunch of one-run games, or is that so much of a factor with bullpens that are so volatile to begin with, that there's not much to be said really about them?
I would put it this way. We know what factors contribute to teams that have good or bad one-run game records, but there has never been any proven correlation. That is, if a team has a very good or a very bad record in one-run games, no one's ever found any convincing evidence to suggest that we know what they're going to do moving forward. So what we can say about the Mariners or the Cubs to this point, especially with the Mariners, you can say, well, they've had a very good bullpen, which is a little surprising, but Edwin Diaz has been outstanding. And the Mariners have been, by whatever measures you want to look at, one of, if not the most clutch team in baseball. But I can tell you that there's really not a whole lot of evidence that clutch is a real thing. I know this is an old stat head point that goes back 15 or 20 years. Mm. Maybe this is a subject for a different segment on the show, but
no, it's well worn, well trod ground. Yeah.
Yeah, we really don't want to get into this any more than we already have. But the Mariners have been a very good clutch hitting team to this point. They're the team that's closest to me. I've seen them a lot. It's felt magical. You know, as a fan, you can't help but feel like there's something real going on. There's not, but the wins all count. So I don't think anyone in Seattle is complaining, and no one's going to take those wins away. And you look at the Cubs, I can't think of any real good reason why you should expect them to have a bad one-run game record moving forward, but bullpen maybe hasn't been quite as good as you would want it to be, despite Brandon Morrow being so good. And, you know, throw in a few poorly timed groundouts or strikeouts, and you've got your recipe. So I know the Brewers, based on their run differential, have overachieved, and the Cubs have underachieved, but I think moving forward, I'd rather be the team with the better run differential than the better record.
Jeff Sullivan, thank you. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
One of the smartest guys analyzing the game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.